Basketball is ready to prove their worth on the national stage. Track and field has multiple national champions, and Jaden Quinn might be related to Jeff Bagwell. But we'll break it all down for you today on the 8th ever episode of Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how you doing?
Doing great, Cohen. Back from spring break. Got some nice resting, but ready to get back after it and cover some Bulldog athletics.
We got spring break off, but many of Concordia's finest did not. In fact, I believe track and field had their nationals over spring break, as well as a few other sports. But how did track and field do?
Track and field did amazing. So we'll start off with the team placements, which were fantastic. The women placed third nationally, and the men placed eighth. So both of them either meeting or exceeding their national rankings coming in. And we'll just get started with some of the All-American athletes. So junior Jenna Esch placed fourth in the 800 meters with a PR of 2:13. And PRs are going to be a theme we're seeing from this national meet, because coming up next, junior Riley Haker PR'd in the 1K with a 2:52.88, which earned her third place. And then another PR, Kaylin Freiberg, got second place in the mile with a 4:54.09. So just crazy time from all three of those. And then Zoe Walker got eighth in the high jump with a 5'6" jump. And then moving on to the women's pole vault, we've got Zoe Pools, who got a season best vault of 12.5". And then in the shot put, Abigail Gerber PR'd with a 46'4" throw. We had some good performers in the pentathlon, Josie Noble and Zoe Walker both competing in that. And then our relays also did amazing. So we had a national champion in the 4x8 relay, which included Jenna Esch, Riley Haker, Julie McIntyre, and then Freiberg. They got a season best and national champion winning time of 9:06.48. And then our women's 4x4 ended up placing sixth with a 3:58.14. And that included Esch, Kaylee Kirchner, Tools, and Jordan Kopke. So great from those relays. And then in the women's weight throw, we had Abby Wolgemuth, who threw 57'8¼". Yeah, so some great work by the women's team. Then moving over to the men's side, as I said, they placed eighth in the national meet overall and had some amazing individual performances. So Calvin Rode, he got a PR in his mile race with a 4:10.63 time. It's wild, getting close to that sub-4, which is insane.
Right,
yeah. And then our first national champion on and only on the men's side, Zach Zoner in the pole vault. We've been saying his name all season long because he has been continuing to perform at a very high level. He got himself a PR of 17'2¾". So in his vault, he had already won the title, skipped a few rounds. So in pole vaulting, you can kind of just go whenever you want to. And then if you end up not being able to meet your height, you're just kind of out. But he ended up waiting a few rounds after he had already won, and then ended up getting a big PR for himself on top of his national championship. And then Mason Ostermeyer, also not to be too overshadowed in the pole vault, he jumped 15'11" to claim himself fifth place. Men's weight throw, we had senior Chris Wren, who ended up placing second with a 65'3¼" throw. So yeah, excellent work from all those guys.
Yeah, and for sure.
Yeah, so that's all we got for track and field. But another national meet that happened over break was wrestling. So we had three competitors make it to nationals: Creighton Bauman, Tommy Wentz, and Mason Garcia. And they did all right. I mean, anytime going to nationals, it's going to be tough, especially because Wentz and Garcia were unranked coming in and both had to face ranked opponents
in their first
couple matches.
Wrestling nationals, it's more of an individual event than a team event.
For us, it was, because we only qualified three,
okay.
So it's going to be tough to get enough team points to really do much.
Okay, but they still tally team points.
Yeah, they do still get team points. So, Bauman was the competitor we had that was able to get some wins, so he won his first match, lost a second, and then won his first consolation match before losing his final match to number 2 ranked wrestler, which ended up sending him out of the tournament. Tommy Wentz, unfortunately, lost both of his matches, and then Garcia lost both of his, but they all qualified, or I know Garcia and Wentz did for the first time in their careers, cool. So good to see them get that experience at Nationals.
Yeah, no, and whenever you can do that on a big stage, too, I think it was like an ESPN3 broadcast or something like that, so, you know, there's pressure, but it's good experience to have for next season, for sure.
For sure, yeah, and then on the track and field side, or indoor season is over, but the outdoor season is just getting started.
Right back at
so, yeah, they've got their first meet in about a week and a half. So not too much downtime before the outdoor season starts.
They just need to get outside, get used to the fresh air. Out of the conditioning, air conditioning.
Yep, well, we just covered 2 national tournaments, so let's get started on talking about the basketball teams, because they're getting geared up for their national tournaments.
Yeah, so before we get to nationals, let's go down men's and then we'll go to women's, but we had GPAC tournaments, obviously, and both of them disappointing finishes for the men and the women, although they were very close in the semifinal game. So we talked about the Dort game, our last episode. The first game over the spring break, when we were all gone, it was Saturday, or maybe not Saturday, but since our last episode, we played Hastings. Lost 78-82. It was really close. Obviously, you've got the big two who put in most of the work. Tristan Smith had 20 points, 10 rebounds, double-double machine. He gets another double-double.
Yep.
Noah Shutt, 22 points, 6 rebounds. Both had pretty efficient nights from the field. Bradley Bennett, the junior, was able to get up there in the scoring column, had 15 points, 6 for 11 from the field. It was really, we kind of started slow, and we almost dug ourselves out of the hole, but as you can see, we were a few points shy when it came down to it. But in the first half, we only shot 46%, 14 for 30 from the field. Like I said, picked it up in the second half, shot 60%, 15 for 25. But when you get down double digits, especially early, and especially in men's basketball, when you only get the 2 halves and there's no breaks for quarters,
right,
you just get less time for the coach to get his guys, see what they're feeling, put in new game plans, put in new defenses, stuff like that. Things can get away from you fast. They did a good job of keeping up there at the end, but like you said, disappointing finish. Going to end up finishing 4th in the GPAC, obviously, go to the semifinal game. Nothing to be sad about, but they do qualify for nationals. I'll get into that more after I break down the women's. So women's, obviously, GPAC tournament. They won their semifinal game. They were playing Briarcliff, and they ended up winning 87-74, so more than a 10-point. They were doing really good at the end of the season.
Yeah, pretty comfortable win for them.
Oh, so but before I dive into this, women's ends with a record 25-6 in overall play, 17-5 in conference play. The men 23-7 overall, 15-5 conference.
So both 5 losses on the season.
Yeah, in conference.
Yeah,
very very good. It was unfortunate for the women that all of their 5 losses were conference losses.
Right.
Although it might not have mattered just because Dort went undefeated in conference play. However, Briarcliff, semifinal game, 13-point win. You had 4 players in double digits, rather. Tayshia had 20. Toomey was out. Toomey was out. She got injured. If you were at the game, she took a pretty hard hit on the floor, and then she had to get checked on for that one. So she was out for the Briarcliff game. It didn't really matter. Again, 13-point lead. 10 players, log minutes. So this was something I talked to Olsen about after the senior night game. And the very first game of the GPAC was how important it is to get minutes for some of the bench players.
Right.
Because in that first GPAC tournament game, everyone on the bench saw the floor, which was really cool.
Yeah, because you never know when you might need one of them in a big game.
Exactly, exactly. And also the other advantage that I think a lot of people overlook with the NAI aspect of things, and I know some D3s do this too, but what is cool about NAI that you don't see it Division One is you have like JV teams,
right?
So they get out and their season obviously wrapped up before the GPAC tournament, both for the guys and the girls, but they were out, they played a good close to 20 games this season. They got to travel, so they got the experience of getting on a bus, you know, missing class, which I'm sure they liked, but going driving to Kansas, driving to South Dakota, driving all around the Midwest, and actually competing. So that's one of the benefits is you kind of, when you get these JV girls and you call them up and these guys on the guys team, you call them up and they've got minutes.
Yeah, they're not coming in cold on the season. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really good. Again, in the Briarcliff game, 10 players log minutes, which is very good. Dort championship game. I don't think this was any secret about who was going to play in the championship game. These were the two best teams in the GPAC. Dort was finished. They were ranked first overall in the nation. Concordia, when the season finished, was ranked 6th overall in the nation. These were the only two teams in the GPAC that were in the top 25. This was no secret. I would argue they're Concordia's two best games of the season were against Dort, and they lost both of them, but it was, again, two of their best games.
Yep.
Again, no McKenzie Toomey, which is a bummer. So they end up losing 71-79. So what they've been doing this season is Kendall Brigham has been kind of six-manning it off the bench, but a very heavily involved six-man. Right.
Like, pretty heavy rotation.
Like James Harden on, like, OKC back when. And she's been consistently dropping 10 or more points. However, with no Toomey, she was able to get in the lineup as a starter, so even more minutes. And she went and dropped 21.
Nice.
In the championship game. So she ended up leading the team in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. I think when you look at the downfall, that Dort has some girls on the roster that are very tall. And it's kind of bizarre looking at the box score. We had one offensive rebound. Dort had 12.
Yeah, that's pretty lopsided, yeah.
So when you, like, think about second chance points and, you know, you get to reset the shot clock and you keep running your offense mm-hmm. and you get to control the pace of the game because you're on offense longer. That's pretty damaging. But, I mean, everywhere else, it was a very, very similar game. Just shooting percentages were similar and then three-point percentages were similar. The big difference, and I think when you look at why we lost that game, is just they out-physicaled in the paint and were able to get more of those offensive
rebounds. Yeah, because I remember talking about that early on in the season, how it's a little bit undersized in some positions, but usually we can make up for that in our good shooting and playmaking. But
we're very guard-heavy. So Toomey especially, she's so athletic. She may not have the size or the height of some of the other girls on the court, but she's very athletic, and she can out-physical people for the ball.
Yeah.
So when you have her out of the lineup, and you've got Tayshia and Kendall both playing, and they're like kind of prototypical guards. It's a very, very guard-heavy lineup. Like, I'm from Houston, so like in 2018, when we were like in the playoffs and in the Western Conference Finals playing the Warriors, and we went no center, and we have PJ Tucker at center, he's like 6'5". It's very much like that, where it's like, we're either going to outscore you or we're going to lose.
Yep.
You know, like, we're just, if we don't hit our shots, we will lose.
Yes.
So,
because they'll get all the rebounds.
Yeah. But, that's just kind of what it is. Although, both these teams are, like I mentioned, looking forward to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. This could be a national tournament final match.
I think it will be. But let's look at the men's first. So, the men will play the Indiana University Northwest Redhawks. So this is kind of the exciting thing about the national tournament is you're going to see teams that aren't in the GPAC. So
yep.
Finally some fresh blood.
Sometimes teams you never heard of before from all around the country.
And also, you know, it gets boring playing the same guys over and over again.
Yep.
And you keep hearing the same names. But just looking at quick review, obviously we haven't had a chance to watch any of the Redhawks game, just them not being in the GPAC. 21-10 overall. They had a 15-5 conference record, so the same conference record as our guys team. Remember, this is the team that the guys are playing.
Yep.
And, I mean, they seem to put up really good numbers. The one thing that sticks out just looking at their box scores is they're consistently scoring above 80.
Okay.
Which has been a pretty good litmus test of a good offense so far this season. Their last game against Indiana University South Bend, they won 88-63.
Okay. So pretty good on both sides of the ball.
Pretty good on both sides of the ball. That will be a very interesting matchup just to see what, you know, Noah Schutt and Tristan Smith, how they're able to slow down the shooting and stuff on defense.
It can be hard to tell the difference in level or even just difference in play style depending on what area of the country you're coming from.
Yes.
It definitely varies place to place.
Yeah. And on the other hand, so flipping over, women are going to play Benedictine. The Benedictine University Eagles is their first matchup of the national mm-hmm. tournament. That they're 9-17, they're 9-7 conference overall. They don't play particularly good at home and they don't play particularly good at away. So, and they will, so just for heads up, the women played themselves into a home game. So this Friday is going to be the women's game versus Benedictine. Saturday is going to be the men's game against Indiana University Northwest.
Yep, and then for the women's side, I believe it's we're hosting all the games for the women. So it's I believe we're hosting our game at 6 p.m., and at 4 p.m., it's going to be the other two teams in our bracket.
Yeah.
And then the winners will play here, no matter who it is.
That sounds right.
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. So, obviously, we came in with such a good seed. If we make it far in the tournament, we're going to have a lot of the home field advantage for the women. It's just going to come down. I think, honestly, I don't see a lot of other center. It's going to be challenging, but I'm just looking forward to seeing Dort again, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I really want another shot at Dort.
Yep.
Because it just, not for the fact that, you know, obviously, love to beat him, but similar for the fact, I think it's going to be a great game.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It has been a great game consistently this season.
And if we end up playing them again, likely to be in a semifinal or final of the national
tournament. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of money on that one. So
yeah.
That's going to be an exciting game.
But got to make it past this first round first.
Exactly. Can't overlook an opponent. But it's not just that's going to the basketball, that's going to the playoffs. We also have had exciting games, especially softball and tennis. What's been going on over break with those two teams?
Yeah, so we've talked previously about softball, and they had a bit of a rough start to the season, but they picked it up a little bit over spring break. So they finished a weekend in Kansas the weekend spring break started, and then they took a trip to Tucson, Arizona. So for a little bit of warm weather, even though it was pretty nice here, they still got that nice experience. So yeah, they went 2-2. Over the 1st and 2nd of March in Kansas. And then the trip to Arizona marked some big wins for them. So they had a 7-0 win against Dickinson State University, an 8-0 win against Tabor, and a 3-0 win against Graceland. So defensively and pitching-wise, excellent in those games. And then a 7-2 win over Valley City State University. They had two losses in there, a 6-1 loss against Medina University, and a super tight 1-0 loss to the University of St. Francis, but 4-2 record, that's picking up their record a little bit, up to 8-14 on the season. And then yesterday they had a doubleheader versus Nebraska Wesleyan, unfortunately lost that 2-3 and then 7-0. But after 22 games on the season, we can see a couple standout players, especially on the offensive side. So Zoe Isom and Jennifer Katz are leading the line offensively for the Bulldogs. Both have 20 hits and 15 RBIs in their 57 and 60 at-bats, respectively. Isom has the highest batting average with a .351, so not too shabby from her. And then Lacey Joseph is leading in runs scored with 12, and she also has 60 at-bats. Yeah, like I said, the record is now 8-14, and they have their first set of home games coming up this Saturday. So finally, time after being in Kansas and Arizona and all around.
World tour.
Yeah, pretty much. So this will be at Plum Creek Ballpark against Peru State College at 2-4 on Saturday. So if you got nothing going on, go out and support the Bulldogs as they get into their first set of home games.
Yep, and similar story with baseball as well. They've been on the road forever, right? Same thing as softball. They've just been traveling.
Yep.
So if we're going to break down their spring break games, they were in Florida to start things off early in the first few days of March. It's kind of interesting. So their first game after our last podcast episode, after the series against Culver Stockton College in Fort Scott, Kansas, they lose in West Palm Beach, Florida, 6-11. They go on to win the next 8, and then they lose to number 8 ranked University of Cumberland in Kentucky. But all of these series were played in West Palm Beach, Florida, or Auburndale, Florida. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the softball's in Arizona. The baseball was in Florida. A lot of the baseball teams, especially even the majors, which is in spring training right now, they like to go down to some of the warmer climates.
Yeah, yeah. And I hate to interrupt you, but I don't know if you saw the new national ranking poll came out.
Yes, 13th.
Yeah, 13th in the country.
And that was after going from we received votes, we were off of it entirely. And then we were able to jump our way all the way up to 13.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'll break that down a little too wide, but just there's so many games, we're not going to be able to dissect them one by one. But just breaking down the score. So after the 6-11 loss, We had a four-game series against Chrysler University. We went 10-9, we went 10-8, game four is canceled because inclement weather.
Yeah.
Then we play against Mount Vernon Nazarene University. We win 4-3, one of the closer contests of the whole spring break. Then we play Valley City University, win 10-1. Calmont College of St. Joseph, 6-2 win. Lawrence Tech University, 13-4 win. Sena Heights University, 6-4 win. Warner University, 4-1 win. Play number 8-ranked University of the Cumberlands, it's a 4-6 loss. But, just like softball, they will be back in town March 16th. We're going to play some familiar faces in the GPAC. It'll be Doane University in Seward, Nebraska. Doubleheader that day. It's going to start at 1 p.m. for the first game, and then it'll be 4 p.m. for the second game, so that'll be 2 7-inning games.
Yep.
But, if we're just going to break down some of the highlights of what happened during while everyone was away, I'm sure you probably saw things on Twitter, but our last podcast episode, we talked about Jaden Quinn.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So he goes back-to-back for the GPAC Player of the Week.
Wow.
His numbers have dipped a little bit since then, but I'm going to give you the numbers from, and just a little bit, but I'm going to give you the numbers from when he was awarded GPAC Player of the Week, okay?
Okay.
On the season at the time, a 500 average. So he was going up to the plate half the time he was getting a hit.
Wow.
27 for 54. His on-base percentage was .583. So almost 60% of the time he's either getting a hit or he's walking. His slug percentage. So this is kind of like a more advanced, it has a little bit more math as a baseball stat. So your batting average is obviously hits divided by at-bats. Walks don't count as at-bats. So what slug does is it takes hits, but it gives you, so any hit is one for your batting average. So one divided by at-bat. If it's a single, double, triple, home run, it's one. Slugging gives a single a one, a double a two, a triple a three, a home run a four.
Okay.
So it rewards better hitting.
Yep.
So his slugging, it's usually, they're always going to be higher numbers, was 1296. So that's, again, it's a crazy good number. You kind of got to be familiar with the numbers to know how good that is, but it's very good. His OPS, which is his slugging, plus his on-base percentage. So this is kind of the ultimate hitting stat, because the one thing slugging doesn't account for is walks.
Right.
And you can be a good hitter that gets a lot of walks. Is near 2,000. 1,979.
That sounds pretty high to me. I don't know that much about baseball, but that sounds high.
It's very good. It's very good. He'd be definitely, if that was an MLB, he'd be leading it by a long shot.
Nice.
He, at the time he got the award, he was leading the GPAC in home runs with 12. He has since added, he played 4 more games after that award, and he got 1 since, and he has 31 RBIs. So, very good performance there from Jaden Quinn.
Yeah.
If you look at the Concordia Bulldogs hitting statistics, this has actually been some of the more impressive numbers to come out of their stint over the spring break.
Yeah, I briefly looked at those today, and they looked pretty good.
They're silly. They're very silly. So, compared to the rest of the GPAC, we rank first in average, first in on-base percentage, first in slugging, first in RBIs, first in walks, first in almost everything.
Sounds like we're first in a lot, yeah.
As a team, we're hitting .341. It's, oh my gosh, we're doing really good.
Yeah.
Is one way to say that. But, again, with all of this hitting performance, it's nice to shout out some of the pitchers. There was one standout performance. There was a few, especially a lot of the bullpen did very good in these games. They were coming in relief of the starters. And when you have so many of these series back-to-back-to-back and a lot of these double headers, that could really be taxing on the young arms.
Yep.
But we had Christian Gutierrez. This was in the 4-1 win versus Warner, so the last game they played before they lost. And Christian Gutierrez ends up going 7 2/3. This is one of the better, highlighting this just because it's one of the better starting pitching performances we've seen. 7 2/3, only gives up 5 hits, 1 run, and it's earned. Only walks 1 and strikes out 9. Very good performance from Christian Gutierrez. Maverick Wilder came in for the save, and he would eventually... It's kind of unfortunate thing about pitching statistics. So Maverick Wilder came in, pitched 1 1/3, struck out 2, and he ends up getting the win. So in baseball, it's very weird how they give wins to pitchers. So Christian Gutierrez gave up the 1 run.
Yeah.
And at that time, the game was tied 1-1. If we would have gone on to lose that game, Christian Gutierrez would have gotten the loss. But the win, because we went on to win, is awarded to whoever was pitching when we got the amount of runs needed to take the lead.
Okay.
So since it was tied, he couldn't have been awarded with a win. So Wilder comes in the eighth inning to get that last out. He was the pitcher on record. And then in that last inning, that's when we get three more runs. We end up getting the win on the game. So Wilder gets the win for pitching.
Okay, so if you're the pitcher who when you're on offense gets the winning runs, you get the win.
Yes.
If you're the pitcher who gives up the runs to lose the game, you get the loss.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's very geared against the pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, if you and like if you go back in baseball history, that's probably why Nolan Ryan doesn't have any Cy Youngs. But it's there's a debate over whether it should be like a pitcher stat, but. Congratulations to Maverick Wilder for getting the win.
Yeah.
But also congratulations for Christian Gutierrez, one of the better pitching performances in that game. That game was particularly interesting because you look at, obviously we've talked about the offensive numbers and it's been so crazy the entire year. Warner, their pitcher, a heck of a game. He pitched a heck of a game. Masner, it doesn't have the first name on the roster, but Masner, he ends up going 8 innings, gives up 5 hits, 1 earned run, strikes out 8, and he gets the loss.
Wow.
So, because he gave up the 1 run that eventually was able to secure the win
for
the Bulldogs.
Yeah, that sucks for him.
Yeah, no, see, it's the world of baseball statistics. This episode could be 5 hours long.
Yeah.
But, in totality, you're looking at the baseball team, you're looking at the basketball team. Obviously, we had a standout performance in wrestling, track and field. There is a lot to be thankful for in Concordia Athletics. And a lot of these teams, if you look at their rosters, they have a lot of youth.
Oh, yeah.
So continued success down the road is something to be looking forward to.
And another team that has some youth are the tennis teams, especially the guys' team. I know they have a couple freshmen who are performing pretty well. So they actually had 4 matches since our last episode. One of them was a 5-2 win against the University of St. Mary. And I mentioned on the last episode how the scoring works. So basically there's 1 point for all the doubles matches, so 1 total point.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 6 singles matches, all which earn a point, which add up to 7. Whoever gets the most wins. So we won the doubles point against St. Mary. And then Grady Works, Manuel Rodriguez, Michael Bedrosian, and Mitch Crum all won their singles points. And then we had a tight 4-3 win against Sterling College. So we won the doubles point again, and then Santiago Abadia, Rodriguez, and Bedrosian, all 3 of them won their singles points. Then we suffered losses to Iowa Central Community College and Mount Marty. So unfortunate to get that GPAC loss, but only 1 GPAC match on the season so far. And then they're going to play their first outdoor home match tomorrow at 2 p.m. So if you don't have class, it's not too far away. It's right on campus.
Yep.
Just go out and go out for a few minutes if you can and give them some support.
Right behind the football field, kind of by David, it's in like the back armpit of campus.
Yeah.
We promise you it's there.
That grassy, woody area.
Yeah.
It's there. You'll find it.
It's
not
there.
Too hard to find. Yeah. And then the women, they had a really good week, which they also had 4 games. They went 3-1. So they beat the University of St. Mary, also 5-2. Mariana Milano, Tessa Blau, Alana Lopez-Pagan, Alexa Richard, and Lauren Gottberg all won their singles matches to get the win. So they didn't get the doubles one, but almost swept the singles round. They then won a close match against Iowa Central Community College. They, again, lost the doubles point, but Lopez-Pagan defeated her singles opponent, and then Richard and Brooke Hosick, but they won due to forfeit. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
So they, Iowa Central didn't have enough players to...
A win's a win.
Yep, it is a win.
A win's a win.
Yep, they then suffered a 5-2 defeat against Sterling College, and then they swept all 7 points against Mount Marty. So they got the doubles point, and all 6 of our girls got the individual wins. So nice to get that GPAC win on the record. And then their next match is in Fremont against Midland on Saturday. So yeah,
cruising.
Yep, good work from the tennis teams over break.
So we've got, this is probably one of the stretches of the season where we have the most active teams right now. So just a recap at the end of the episode, we've got women's game tomorrow.
Yep.
Tennis tomorrow.
Yep.
We're gonna have men's basketball on Saturday. Softball and baseball are both going to be home. The field is not on campus. It's in Seward. If you just Google it, you'll find it.
It's like a 3-minute drive. You can make it.
Yeah, you can make it. So we've got a lot of events. This is going to be an action-packed couple of weeks.
And then we have women's tennis also on Saturday in Fremont.
Women's tennis in Fremont. So a lot of things to attend, a lot of things to watch online, but it's all very, very exciting, especially this time of year.
Make sure you tune into the next episode so you can hear all the action from this coming week.
Yep, if you absolutely can't make it, we're here for you.
Yep.
But anyways, that will be all for our 8th ever episode of Talking Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in for weekly podcasts on the CUNE Sower website. In the meantime, from Cohen Carpenter and Kyle Brook and everyone at the Sower newspaper, have a great day and go Dogs!